Being with other people is a key part of hygge, writes Mike Wyking, CEO of the Happiness Research Institute in Copenhagen. He says there is a broad agreement among happiness researchers and scientists that social relationships are essential for people's happiness. And yes, he continues, as scientists, we can find it quite frustrating to spend years looking into the question of why some people are happier than others and then find an answer that we all knew anyway. The most important social relationships are close relationships, in which you experience being understood, where you share thoughts and feelings, and both give and receive support. In one word, hygge. He wrote the book. This is something I love most about Jesus. I love a lot of things about Jesus, but this is probably the thing for me that just keeps me coming back again and again. Now, I must say, I've never thought before about using the word hygge to describe Jesus, but that's actually because I didn't know the word hygge until we brought it up at a staff conversation about planning sermon series. So now that I know the word, I think it's fascinating to think about whether or not this applies to Jesus. Usually, I want to fight against the temptation to sentimentalize Jesus or turn him into something so cozy and cuddly that we miss the importance and the impact of a world-changing message that he had to deliver. But really, over and over and over again in the Gospels, we encounter stories about Jesus doing exactly like Mike Wyking describes as the definition of hygge. Forming relationships with people in which they experience feeling understood, where they share their thoughts and feelings, and where they receive support. Jesus had a way of doing this. And most amazing of all is that Jesus didn't do this only for the wealthiest or the most powerful or the most influential in the towns that he visited. He did this with the people who were on the margins. For Jesus, the margins were the center of focus, the center of healing, and the center of the gospel message of God's redeeming love. I love this about Jesus. Anybody else? I love this guy. I hold up story after story after story where he does this kind of thing, where he does one-on-one ministry with hurting people in a way that inspires me to want to do my work and ministry better. And then we get to Matthew 15, and it all goes out the window. Because in Matthew 15, suddenly Jesus is not so hygge-lig, at least not at first. Jesus and his disciples have entered the region of Tyre and Sidon. These are port cities. They're on the Mediterranean Sea. They're north of the region of Galilee in what was then known as Phoenicia and is now known as the country of Lebanon. So that's where Jesus is going, north out of Israel into what we now call Lebanon. And these cities, Tyre and Sidon, were two coast cities, and they were very important in their time because they were part of major trade routes. And they're actually just north of this map, but I wanted you to see these areas where Jesus traveled. Judea to the south, then through Samaria up into Galilee, and then he went off that map up into the region of Tyre and Sidon on this day. And the reason that's important is because he goes to these cities to withdraw. And when I'm feeling like withdrawing, I don't usually choose a hustling, bustling city with a lot going on. But perhaps Jesus anticipated that traveling beyond the usual geography of his region, traveling outside of the areas where he was most known and followed by crowds, might afford him just a moment's peace. And maybe if he went somewhere where he could just blend in to all the other hustle and bustle that was going on, he would have a chance to relax and recharge. Maybe he would find the opportunity to get a break from the pressures of his ministry. But no such luck. Jesus is greeted almost immediately as he arrives in their region by a woman a Canaanite woman. She recognizes him, and she comes to ask him for help, but what she asks for specifically is mercy. Lord, have mercy on me. I hear her saying to Jesus, have mercy on me. See me for who I am. Hear my story with compassion. Offer me support during this very challenging and difficult time in my life when my daughter is so sick. She recognizes Jesus, and she asks Jesus to recognize her. And in the least hygge response in the history of responses, Jesus says, nothing. He completely ignores her, as if she is not standing in front of him, calling out to him. He says nothing. And then the disciples, they gather around Jesus, and I imagine scenes from every teenage movie ever made, where the cool kids gather around in a clump, and there's someone who's been left out of the group. And here in the clump is the whispering and the chattering and the discussing about the person who's not part of the group, who's over there. And the disciples did it just like those teenage movies. Really, when you hear what they say, they sounded like a bunch of mean girls gathered around Jesus, talking about this woman who recognized him and called out for help. They say, tell her to back off, Jesus. Send her home, Jesus. She is so annoying, Jesus. You don't owe her anything, Jesus. She is not your responsibility, Jesus. And for a moment, Jesus seems to buy in to the disciples and to their commentary. He responds to them within their group with a comment about the scope of his mission, as if that justifies a reason that he can dismiss this woman in her time of need and choose not to answer her. I mean, technically, I did come for the people of Israel, and she's a Canaanite, so, I mean, what do you expect of me, right? So far, Jesus and the disciples have had this entire conversation off to the side without so much as even acknowledging the woman crying out to him. I'm reminded on this Martin Luther King Jr. weekend of a quote from the great civil rights leader. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. This woman recognizes Jesus and she calls out to him in a familiar way, and he may never have met her, but she knew him. She called out to him with these familiar words. In fact, she maybe even calls out to him as family. She calls him Lord, Son of David. That acknowledges her belief in his power and authority, and also notes a potential connection in their ancestry. Remember a few weeks ago when we read the genealogy of Jesus, if you were here at the end of December? That is the lineage that makes him a son over several generations of David. And that's the name she calls out to him, Jesus, Lord, Son of David. Matthew refers to Jesus as Son of David. Many people in Matthew's gospel call Jesus Son of David. And that's because Matthew was writing to a Jewish community, and he was making clear to his Jewish community that Jesus was Jewish from the line of David. But I'm intrigued because in that same lineage are named three Canaanite women, Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth, all named in the lineage of Jesus in Matthew 1. This Canaanite woman recognizes Jesus as the Messiah. And maybe, just maybe, she also recognizes that he is connected to her through their shared heritage and ancestry. And yet, Jesus, whom she knows, her friend, is silent, even participating with the disciples in treating her as something other to be ignored. Sometimes I really don't like this story. I don't want Jesus to behave this way. I don't want Jesus to reject someone because of her ethnicity or because it's so inconvenient for him to give her attention. I want Jesus to embrace this woman with all the hygge that ever was. I want him to ask her her name. I want to know her name. I want him to honor her experience and listen to her story and heal her daughter. But that's not what Jesus does. At least not until she convinces him. It is possible, though, that the way Jesus does respond in this story might be more helpful for us. There might actually be something instructive for us to learn as we try to live in our world today as followers of Jesus. Because in this story, as it unfolds, we see something pretty remarkable happen. We see Jesus reconsider his position, and we see him move from a position of exclusion to a position of inclusion. We see Jesus, who had drawn the line about who was an insider and outsider, erase the line and welcome the woman in by the end of the story. This is incredibly instructive for us in our world today. Jesus moves from exclusion to inclusion for someone who would, by the standards of his culture, be considered unclean and unworthy. For someone outside of his proclaimed mission field. For someone bothersome and annoying. For a stranger whose life bears little resemblance to his own. As he reflects on hygge, the writer of the book on hygge, Mike Wyking, makes an important acknowledgement about how close relationships work. Hanging out with your close friends in a tightly knit social network where you all go way back together and you know each other well definitely has its benefits. But in recent years, he writes, I have also come to realize that there is a severe drawback to a social landscape like this. It doesn't readily admit newcomers. Every person I've met who has moved to Denmark, he says, tells me the same thing. It's close to impossible to penetrate the social circles there. But that's only the beginning. Because this week I read research from the Barna Group that suggests that in recent years, the increasing numbers of people who do not attend church no longer consider the church a place where they would find a genuine and welcoming community. Instead, those interviewed say that the church has become known as a place where close-knit relationships have already been formed over many years by the people inside the church, and newcomers fear they will struggle to find deep connections of their own or to feel like they really belong. It's a warning to us. Our hygge is a good, good thing, and it makes us happy. But if we are not careful, our hygge might become someone else's isolation or feeling of being left out. Indeed, we may still have the same problem today that the disciples had with the Canaanite woman, because we don't have to go to Denmark to witness people being excluded, marginalized, even oppressed for any number of reasons. Race, gender, sexuality, socioeconomics. We continue to face the reality that inequity permeates our culture, and we cannot overcome it unless we are willing to give of ourselves for one another. So I'm reminded again of the words of Dr. King. Human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Every step toward the goal of justice requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle, the tireless exertions and passionate concern of dedicated individuals. The Canaanite woman must have realized Jesus was not going to help her. She fell to her knees right at his feet and asked again to be seen, to be valued, to be helped. And Jesus dismissed her as unworthy. But she did not allow herself to be dismissed. She knew who he was, and she called him to account. Even she, a Canaanite, a woman, a mother of a demon-possessed child, could be restored by the crumbs from his table. And he agreed. In her reminder to him, he saw her great faith. Now, the reason this story turns me upside down, and I think all of us upside down, is because we come to stories like this looking for Jesus to be the one who brings the hygge. But in this encounter, it's the woman who brings the hygge. Where we expect Jesus to choose her, she is the one who chooses Jesus. She invites Jesus into a relationship with her, where he is recognized and known, where he is understood and valued. And the word for that, long before there was such a thing as hygge, is faith. Healing and wholeness is not only about our bodies and our minds, it's also about our relationships. To live into the ideals of hygge, but more importantly, to live into our faith. As followers of Jesus, we are called to seek relationships that honor the human dignity in one another, to care about justice for our neighbors, to seek reconciliation with those whom we have harmed, to unearth forgiveness wherever possible, and to name the places where inequity and violence or injustice continue to cause our relationships to be broken. This is the hard work of healing our communities long for. Jesus chose his disciples, but today the Canaanite woman chose Jesus. So too may we choose Jesus and work to ensure that every person has the opportunity to feel chosen, to belong to a community with hope. May we be inspired by Jesus to listen, to see, to be moved, and to bring healing wherever we can. Amen.